Welcome to The Maker Show, a new channel and show for makers, hackers, developers, and disassemblers. If you want to know how to get started with Arduinos and Raspberry Pis, this is the show for you. If you grew up taking stuff apart, like your family's toaster or your dad's VCR, this is the show for you. And if you're more comfortable with a laser cutter than a pair of scissors, then this is definitely the show for you. Every week, our makers will tackle a topic or a technique from the maker world. We'll go hands-on on camera. You'll see hardware. You'll see electronics. You'll see code. And you'll definitely see a lot of cool stuff. This is a no-fluff technical show. This is a show for beginners and experts alike. Everybody's welcome to join. My name is Nick Landry, and this is The Maker Show. This is special episode zero, where you get to meet your makers. We rounded up a whole bunch of contributors from the show. They're all makers, so you'll get to know them better. I'll get their perspective on the show about the maker world, how to get started, and we'll also ask them like what they have in store for the maker show for future episodes. So why don't we get started with a round of introductions? I'll go through each of you. If you can just tell the viewers like who you are, what do you do, where do you live, maybe, because we're all over the country right now, and what do you specialize in? So, Jeremy.
Hey there, everybody. Jeremy Foster here. I go by Code Foster, so you can find me online at codefoster.com. I love making stuff, all kinds of stuff. I especially love making things in 3D, using 3D design software, and then, you know, using additive or subtractive printing techniques to make those things real. I also love making smart devices and programming them using JavaScript. It's kind of fun thinking about being able to write JavaScript everywhere on the client and the server and everything. So really excited about bringing some of this fun maker topics to you guys, our audience. It's going to be a really fun time.
Cool. Thanks, Jeremy. Hey, Sam, why don't you go ahead?
Hi, I'm Sam Stokes. I also am known as SoCal Sam because I live in Southern California, specifically Dana Point, the mean streets of Dana Point. That's just a joke. I surf and enjoy fishing, surf fishing. So a lot of my things that I'll be doing relate to exploring the what's referred to sometimes as the littoral environment or the coastline environment, using devices that, well, for the best of things, might be referred to as toys. I don't have access to the laser cutters or 3D printers, so a lot of my projects are usually just hacked out from wood I find by construction sites and stuff like that. And then very inexpensive servos, Node MCUs, which can be purchased for about $7. And just have a good time and try to keep everything as low cost as possible.
Cool. Thanks, Sam. Hey, Brett, why don't you tell us about yourself?
Yeah, my name is Brett Statham, and I'm Brett Statham on Twitter and online. And I'm actually based down in San Diego. I love making things real. I've got access to a couple of maker spaces and places where I have access to toys like, you know, CNC routers and CNC mills and plasma cutters and all that kind of stuff. So I've had a lot of fun lately getting to play with those. On the electronic side, I'm really interested in extending the reach of the electronics and helping them, interact with yourself, but also interact with the rest of the world by connecting up to the cloud and fun stuff like that. So that's a lot of the projects I'll be working on.
Very cool. Ian, why don't you tell us about yourself?
Hey, I'm Ian Philpott. You can find me online as Dev Ian. So my website's devian.co. I like building robots and playing with drones. I do a little bit of work with wearables, so I'll be showing some videos on that, as well as, like Brett said, trying to make them talk with the cloud.
Cool. Kenny.
Hey, everybody. My name is Kenny Spade. I am online as Kenny Spade. I'm out of the Silicon Valley campus of Microsoft in Mountain View, California. I live and work here, have been with Microsoft for about 7.5 years. And just recently, I have started running the garage out of our Silicon Valley campus. So I have my own makerspace. I've got lasers, 3D printers, soldering, all kinds of electronics and stuff. It is amazing. So it's one of the things that that I really like to do. And now I actually get to work full time doing it. My favorite piece of tech is the laser. I love kind of doing some of the creative stuff on there, ranging from cutting IoT enclosures to, we actually just did a full set of a prototype of a board game that that my brother is working on. So we cut a bunch of them out of wood, did some out of acrylic, Got to play with all kinds of different stuff in there, so I love the versatility of that kind of thing.
Cool. Thanks, Kenny. And I'm Nick Landry. I'm also known as ActiveNick in the Microsoft community. It's also my Twitter handle. I blog at ageofmobility.com. I basically specialize on cross-platform mobility, also IoT, the maker side of things. On the cloud, I work on cloud services primarily for mobile developers and for IoT developers. I also dabble in game development. I live in New Jersey, just outside of Princeton. Let me get something out of the way right now. If you're trying to pinpoint my accent, I'm actually French-Canadian, so you can all go back to just listening to what we're saying instead of trying to analyze my accent. And yeah, this is the Maker Show. We'll be talking about a lot of cool topics. And the thing is, we probably have a lot of people that are watching this show. Some of them are probably already makers, very active with hardware boards or manufacturing or creating their own gadgets. But I'm sure we have others that are probably software developers that are very interested in becoming makers. So let me turn to you guys and ask, why do you think that developers should become makers exactly? What's in it for them? What's the opportunity? I mean, we all find it very fun, of course, but beyond the fun factor, why should they care about becoming makers?
But I'll jump in there. I think for me, I've been a coder since I was, 13, and it was always really empowering to be able to make the computer do what you wanted it to do. But when you get into making things and you're working with these boards and you're tying them up to motors and actuators and sensors and things like that, your code becomes real. You get to make your code go do real physical things in the real physical world. And the really cool thing about that is that probably regardless of the language that you work with, you'll probably find that you can use those languages and tools to go do something real with this.
And that's never more obvious, Brett, than when I'm working with a student group, and it doesn't matter what I do on the screen. It can be the coolest thing in the world. It's still just kind of on the screen. It's intangible. But as soon as there's a robot in the room, as soon as there's something that's flipping and moving and something to push and something to light up, then all of a sudden the students are like, wow, this is awesome. Yep.
Yeah, if your parents don't understand why you're in tech and you can show them a robot, I mean, that's something that they'll be like, oh, I get it now. So the one thing that I would definitely say is for me, when I started getting into hardware, it was something where I was a total software guy. And it was because I had played with hardware a little bit in the past and had always ended up within about 5-10 minutes burning out about $50 worth of hardware. And so when I was approached by somebody with the Netduino, and they told me, oh, yeah, you just plug some stuff into it and you write the same code that you were writing on the software side. I started going, oh, this is something that I can do. And I started playing with that. And now I'm to the point where, I'm using lasers, 3D printers, chop saws. Like, I've got a full wood shop that I've been playing with. And I'm not afraid of hardware anymore. And so it's one of those where it's now so easy and so accessible that it can be your gateway into all kinds of other stuff that you can build that you might not have thought that you had the capability to do before.
Yeah, it's true, because it kind of all became very accessible. Like, for example, we've seen how open source software completely changed the world of software development. And now we've got open source hardware like the Arduino. And there's been others as well. But Arduino is probably like the main one out there that truly kind of democratized the hardware world. I was in the same boat. I mean, when I was a kid, I had like the science fair kit, 160-in-1 from Radio Shack, and with the little springs and everything. And it was cool. I mean, I was assembling like the lie detector and the electronic candle. And but unlike some of you guys, I didn't really like go heads down into the electronics world for all these years. It was the same thing for me. When I saw the Arduino come along and I realized, I can just control something. And once you start realizing that you can turn on, like, for example, something as simple as turning on an LED that is internet controlled. So you're creating a web page or an app, you send a signal down, and you see that light just turn on. Immediately there's a click in your mind when you realize there's a world of possibilities out there. And in fact, one of my specialties is development with speech and Cortana. In fact, Jeremy and I did record a whole MVA on this. When we think about home automation, it's all about basically wanting to control your home, turning on stuff, analyzing patterns. Pushing buttons on an app is one thing, but speaking it out loud is definitely much better to actually control things around you. So I think there's just a great world of opportunities for people, and especially since they're going to build actual skills. It's not just like a side gig. It's kind of an extension of their developer skills. And they'll be playing with the cloud as well to control things. So they're going to be picking up a lot of skills that they can actually use in their day job, even if it doesn't really involve doing electronics.
You know what?
I agree. Computer vision was really what turned me onto this. Being able to interact and make things move when I move, building little robots, and when I, you know, build a little sword fighting robot, and when I do this gesture, it does it as well and stuff. And I was just like, okay, I'm hooked.
Yeah. You know, we could look at this from the perspective of the, you know, coming into the hardware world from the software world is kind of more removing of the boundaries. Like this, I was into software because I felt like I could do whatever I wanted. If I wanted to organize my movie library, I could write some software for that. You know, like whatever it is that I want to do, I can do that. And then when I venture into the hardware world as well, it's more removing the barriers. And so when students are coming in, there's not nearly as much of a barrier now between their ideas and the implementation of their ideas as there used to be. And that's wonderful because it's room for creativity. It's like breathing room. And that's great. It's a good time we live in.
Yes. Well, something else I think of there is it's amazing to me how often my programming skills translate into hardware skills. Where, you know, if you think about especially the computer controlled machinery, right, where you almost end up programming the physical action.
Right.
And that's really empowering too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's for when I'm using the laser, it's one of those things where I can't use a pair of scissors to save my life, but I can spend 15 minutes getting it perfect in Illustrator and then click the button on the laser and it'll cut exactly what I wanted. And I mean, even if you're working on a piece of paper, I find that easier to do than actually kind of trying to figure out how to get that to work.
And Kenny, you can even programmatically create those vector files that get sent to the laser. So now all of a sudden you can make something that has some mathematical sense to it besides just, you know, something that's created with the hand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Hey, Sam, why should developers become makers?
Well, you know, I didn't come to software initially in my career other than control systems. And, you know, the hardware is really what the software people are working with, and what I want to do is try to help people see that the embedded systems that we're talking about, like the Arduino, are very reachable, and that it's something that you don't have to have. I mean, it's nice to have a laser printer or a CNC type of device, but what I want to show is that just using some basic tools around the house, you can make some very interesting items like pinball machines and fun games that you can actually see and interact with other than through a joystick. So that's where I'm coming from.
Cool. So basically, we've known that there's been like a big transformation, like hardware is more accessible, it's easier to program, it's much cheaper as well. You don't have to invest thousands of dollars. But still, how should developers get started to become makers? What do they need to buy? Do they need to outfit their garage at home just like Brett's behind them there?
Or I don't think so. No, I definitely
what should they buy?
Don't agree.
Yeah, so my question to you guys is basically, what should they buy? How should they get started? What should they build also? What should they really look at? I get people that come talk to me and sometimes they're like, I don't have any ideas. I don't know what to build. So what advice would you give to a new maker getting started?
Legos. I'll start on that one. I think that what you really want to do is you want to build the concepts because you need the concepts in order to be an outlet for your creativity. But until the concepts come, it's helpful to just go through rote procedure. And one of the best ways to do that is to just go online to Hackster.io or Instructables or one of these sites and pick a project and buy the bill of materials that it says to buy and follow the steps and put it together. And inevitably, the concepts will come. Like, don't worry about it at first. Don't try to just, you know, divine the understanding. Just go through the steps and then the understanding will start to come. You'll raise the questions. You'll find people to answer them. So definitely get involved in these online communities.
So basically build your skills by reproducing what others have built to make sure that you understand like where to buy the parts, how to program them, how to assemble them, and then your own ideas will come.
There's nothing truly original.
Well, and I think most developers have learned code that way, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, especially as new technologies come out, we're always looking at samples and tutorials and things like that. So just go make something. Pick a project that looks interesting and go build it.
Yep. It's harder to copy-paste hardware, though. You have to put a little bit more work into it, you know?
Yeah.
You need real glue.
if I was getting started, I would use the Grove system, which keeps you from having to use all the little skinny wires that can be confusing. The Grove system works with Arduino Unos and the Node MCUs, and there's a even one for a particle. Now, the Node MCU is a Wi-Fi based system, and you could get a Node MCU and a Grove board for well under $30, and that would be a great place to start.
Yeah, and so one of the things is, if you're familiar with a certain language already, I mean, Jeremy was talking all about the stuff that he can do with JavaScript. For me, I was a C-sharp developer, so when somebody handed me a Netduino board, I could take the existing software skills that I had and immediately do hardware. I didn't have to think about, okay, well, now I'm learning new hardware stuff, and I have to learn an entirely new language for that. So if you're familiar with a specific language, I guarantee that you can find a board out there that will run on that language. So basically find something that's going to work with your existing skill set so that you're not doubly kind of fish out of water.
Right.
So the other part of it is, and this is what I basically tell all people who are starting to do code or hardware or anything like that, is do something that you're going to actually enjoy. So I know a bunch of people who started in software with business design systems, and they're looking at, okay, well, I have to make the employee class, and the employee has a manager subclass, or, you know, all of this kind of stuff. And they're so bored with it that they say, okay, if this is programming, I'm not going to do it.
Right.
So if you're going to do hardware, same thing. Find something that you're actually going to enjoy and start working on that. And there's definitely, like Jeremy was saying, there's definitely a tutorial. Somebody has already thought of that, and somebody has already done that. So build one of your own and take somebody else's idea that matches what you're trying to do, build it, and that way you'll actually enjoy the entire process and get something that you appreciate out of it, so that you can kind of start from something that you enjoy the whole way through.
I like that advice, because that kind of connects a lot with one of the things that I teach a lot of mobile development, whether it's on like Windows, iOS, Android. And my advice to mobile developers has always been, build an app that you're going to use yourself. Like, be your first user. Because if you're not going to use your own app, like, what makes you think that others will? When it comes to hacks and building like gadgets, I think it's the same thing. Beyond like reproducing what others have done, build something that you can see a use for. Like something as simple, for example, like I have a house and I would love to automate more stuff in my house. Since I do a lot of work with speech, I would love to be able to build a gadget where I can control things. So something as simple as speaking to a device and then the light turns on, the light turns off. So simple things that you will actually see a value in your own life. Mm-hmm. And so Ian, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think also, you know, inspecting, if you are, like, one of the things I just recently went out and purchased was a drone, and one of my big criteria was that it had a pretty open API that I could work with as well. before I started to make my own drone, I wanted to kind of learn how they work themselves and see some of the programming models and things that underpin them. So that would be kind of one of my advice, is kind of playing on what Kenny said, was look at what programming languages you're most effective in and focus on that. Make sure it has open APIs, whatever devices you're going to use. And because if you are approaching this as a developer, like many of us are, that's, you know, one of the key parts is I'm going to write code to make this do something. So
one of the points that I haven't really seen on here is you can also take a look at what's around you. Go to meetup.com, take a look at some of the different groups that are around you, find out what they're doing, and then if you actually start and go, okay, that's interesting enough that I'm into that, start on a project with them. And that way you've got a full set of advisors, you've got a full set of people who can sit down next to you. I can't underestimate the amount of benefit that I got from pair coding with Jeremy. Like, he has walked me through so many great things around, like, this is how you do Node. This is, you know, and it's really amazing how much faster you learn when you've got other people that right there with you. And makerspaces are becoming kind of everywhere. Like, they're getting around the country, around the world. You can find one near you or that requires a short car trip. So there's definitely someone that you can work with and benefit from.
My approach on this is, maybe you might want to consider yourself a citizen scientist and you're wanting to set up a system to measure some environmental elements. We do that a lot. And like the work that I'm doing maps to determining why sponges disappeared along the West Coast. And that's some of the stuff I'm doing, collecting the samples for local scientists at one of the universities.
Yeah. Right. And also another thing I would love to, I don't want to scare anybody away, but I mean, we're not talking about software, we're talking about hardware, which means you'll have to buy stuff for this.
Yeah.
So you should not be afraid of buying things. And don't just buy, you're not going to buy just one Arduino or one Raspberry Pi. You will buy many. You will burn some. You will lose some stuff. And also, once you build a gadget, well, if you want to build another one, either you disassemble what you built or you buy more stuff to build another one. So you do need to have disposable income to do this kind of stuff. So build a list somewhere and tell your family, and from now on, you know, we're shopping for ideas for your birthday or the holidays. Yeah, just get me another hardware kit or something, or some Arduinos.
Yeah,
or a glue gun.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, there's money to spend, but I think you can also spend it incrementally.
Right.
You can start out and say, you know, here's this one project. And let me just go buy some equipment around that, and buy as little as you can, and just what you need for that project. But you'll probably find that some of that stuff then translates into the next project, even if it's not the equipment, the resistors and the LEDs, but the tools, the screwdrivers.
Right.
Nick, you were talking about the wall behind me. All of that stuff there was just stuff that I bought over time because I needed it for this task or for that task.
Yeah, well,
I didn't buy everything all at once.
One of the great things is that if you have it on your Christmas list and you get four Arduinos, you're not going to be upset that
four different people
bought you the same thing.
Right. That's okay.
Yeah.
You can just go right out and burn three of them.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
A lot of those boards, too, like your Arduino, you know, you might start prototyping with maybe an Uno, but if you really wanted to turn that into a long-term device, then you could go out and buy a cheaper version of an Arduino, you know, like a Nano or something that had more just specific requirements for just that project, and then use a cheaper long-term board for that, and then keep your more expensive boards for the prototyping and stuff.
Right. So to be clear, basically, we know that people will, over time, may spend a lot of money if they really go into it and they really enjoy it, but you can definitely get started for less than $50.
Yep.
And you can build your own test equipment, too. The Arduino is a very good system to build an oscilloscope or a voltage meter.
Hey, you know what? Let me say, I notice that a lot of people tend to either go to the kind of the popular maker and IoT suppliers online, or they go to their local Radio Shack, and the prices are a little steep sometimes on both of those because you're buying curated packages, or you're going to Radio Shack and you're paying for the benefit of just being able to go down the road and get it. But don't overlook the kind of the classic online electronic suppliers like DigiKey and Jameco and Mouser, because sometimes I'll find the same part for $1.50 online at one of the popular ones, and then I'll find it on Mouser for 17 cents, you know.
Yep.
So don't overlook those for sure.
Well, you'll have to pay shipping on those, but of course, if you buy a lot, then usually you can actually save over time.
Although luckily, in my area, we've actually got stores for a lot of those places, so I can drive right down the street and visit Jameco and pick stuff up at the will call. And, you know, it is kind of awkward going in there and having them go into the back and bring me out a 17-cent part. But, I mean, it saves me shipping.
Well, and along with that, you know, you talk about classic online sites. That's kind of funny to call them classic now. But, you know, there are tons of old school, you know, electronic shops and things like that. Things that were around, you know, back in, you know, the Tandy Radio Shack days and all that kind of stuff. And there's still some of those. And I think you'll probably find in your area, a lot of the times they're now also surplus shops. And those are also fantastic places.
Walk the aisles.
And go, I can use that for this project, or that's exactly the piece.
It's a good way to generate ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Jeremy already named a few of the good electronic shops, of course. But then, of course, there's the classics like, you know, Adafruit and the Maker Shed. I mean, I like Maker Shed. Unfortunately, I find their markups a little high sometimes. Radio Shack, we mentioned it. I mean, the thing with Radio Shack is I wouldn't build my first kit with a Radio Shack kit. But when you're in the middle of a project and you need something fast, and you can't wait for shipping, then go drive to your local Radio Shack if you still have one, and then just go buy those parts. But just buy exactly what you need. Don't buy too much extra, because.
And I want to mention SparkFun too. That's another one of those.
Yeah, SparkFun definitely is great for that.
Yeah,
and I've bought a lot of stuff on Amazon as well.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, me too. Not only good components, but it's nice when the sites give you the packages that you can buy. It's good for people that are getting started. Or also, you know, for instance, Sam, you mentioned the Node MCU, and you can buy some of these components like raw and pay $1.50 for them. But sometimes SparkFun will take that same thing and they'll put it in a little kit that that can walk you through soldering it together, and it'll give you a whole helper board for it, make life a lot easier for you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, ARDX is another one. It's a good one.
So one thing not to underestimate, though, is that when you do actually get to go into one of those physical shops, so locally here I've got Halted, it's kind of a surplus place, I've got Evil Mad Scientist. When you go in there, you actually have people that you can talk to, mm-hmm. and you can tell them, this is what I'm looking at doing, and then they'll stop you and say, well, then you probably don't want what you're looking at buying. You probably want this, and something that you have no idea existed suddenly solves your problem without having to buy five or six parts and wiring it together. Yeah. So I was working on a weather sensor and disassembling some bathroom scales and trying to put everything, or not a weather scale, a weight scale rather, to measure snow. Taking apart weight scale, some scales and trying to figure out like what pieces and parts do I need. And then somebody told me like, oh, they sell that on SparkFun. And I just bought a single piece that did everything that I was trying to wire up, and I didn't have to do the math. I didn't have to do anything. I just plugged it into my Arduino, and I'm done.
Nice. And of course, if you want to learn more, there's websites out there and everything. There's also good books and magazines. For example, I'm a huge fan of Make Magazine. Mm-hmm. I loved it because if you don't have any ideas, just go subscribe to this, get a digital edition, you get access to the whole backlog, and just go read about the crazy stuff that people are building, and then soon enough you'll get your own ideas, and that can also be another source of inspiration for some hacks of your own, you know?
Yeah, one of the things I love about Make is that there's really projects really across the scale of skill, and I've gotten to do so many projects with my kids out of Make Magazine,
nice.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Scarbox guitar and little brush bots like and Vibrobots and lots of other fun stuff. The compressed air rocket launchers and so lots of really cool projects to help get your kids involved in making too.
Well, so since you're talking about specific like hardware and things like that now, let's segue into my next question for you guys. I'd like to know what are your favorite like hardware boards, or if you have like a tool that you can't live with without, you know, or maybe a device that you use a lot in hacks. So, if you have them around, of course, if you can show them, that'd be great. So, I'd love to know what's your favorite stuff.
I really like the TI launch pads, but they can be hard to work with. The nice thing about the TI launch pads is that they come with some very powerful processors. If you want to use C coding or do some more complex kind of things, but they also work with the Arduino wiring language. So, and they're cheap. TI wants to get them out there, and you can get some very fancy boards for under $20.
So the Raspberry Pi deserves good mention. One of the things I like about this board is that the operating system is on an SD card, and I can put Windows 10 IoT Core on one card and one distribution of Linux on another and another distribution on another, and then I can just swap them out and boot to whatever operating system I want. So that's a classic. I get a little bit bothered by big boards that remind me that I'm really just prototyping here. You know, I mean, I kind of like the idea that I could take this to production, and so I get real wooed by the likes of Intel Edison that's really small, and I feel like as soon as I'm done writing my project, whatever it is, I'm going to be able to deploy this. I'm going to actually be able to put this into an installation. So those are a couple of my favorite boards, but I'm usually open to the ones that are more high level and allow me to write in languages like JavaScript as opposed to the lower level code that causes me to pull hair out.
You mean like
Jeremy,
C?
Have you got one of the particle photons there that you can show?
I do.
I have one right here. Yeah, that's one of my favorite.
That is absolutely my favorite board. And the reason that that's my favorite board is because I don't have to install anything on my computer. So I plug that thing in. It connects to my Wi-Fi. The editor is completely on the browser. You can deploy code remotely. And when I'm working, especially when I'm doing like a workshop for kids, one of the things that happens is I get an hour with them, and the first half hour is installing the Arduino IDE, getting everything set up, finding out that, no, they didn't do step three and they haven't installed the drivers yet, so they can't connect to it when they get to that step. So having this available to me and knowing that every one of them can simply log into to a website, do their code there, click the deploy button, have it run, is amazing. So that saves me a lot of time, saves me a lot of effort when I'm working through there. And then because it's connected to the Wi-Fi already, it's immediately got a web service that you can call to. So if you wanted to expose something like you've got it connected to a weather shield and you want to be able to pull the temperature and humidity from it, you simply do a single line of code and turn a variable into a web variable. And so it's really easy to use for a lot of scenarios where you'd have to do a lot of work otherwise. And actually, that board itself is cheaper than the Wi-Fi shield for your Arduino.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's right. And the nice thing about the Particle Photon is that you could do many things with the Tinker app on an iPhone or an Android device.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, plus, I'd like to echo the sentiment around the Particle Photon. That's why, I mean, for those that have never seen it, just look at the size of this thing. This is a half breadboard, and it's tiny. We've got headers. You can plug it directly into a breadboard, so it's great for prototyping. But then the better part also is that it comes with its own shields. But instead of the shields like the Arduino that sit on top of the Arduino, the shields for the Photon, it's the Photon that actually sits directly on the shield. So it's got a socket for it. So this is a weather shield here. You also have like bigger ones, for example, like this is a relay shield for the Photon. So this is great because you're connected to the internet, and now you can control anything. You can plug into those relays, and that could be like a lamp, that could be like a stereo system, whatever you want.
That was the compressed air rocket launcher we made at the internet-enabled compressed air rocket launcher with one of those relay boards. So yeah, the other cool thing about the whole particle family is that sort of built-in cloud back-end like Kenny was talking about, and that you just sort of get internet-enabled for free along with that board, and you don't pay for their cloud back-end. I mean, it's just part of the purchase price of the board, so it makes it really easy to sort of internet-enable your device.
This particle board thing. I don't go out much past Arduinos and Raspberry Pis as of yet, but one of my things is just using a lot of the watches and anything with like an accelerometer or a gyroscope in it that I can pull that data from and send it up to the web and then back down to an Arduino or a Pi. So one of the things I've been hacking on, of course, is just the band a lot, and pulling all the sensor data right off of that and trying to make things move just using those things. So that's, yeah.
You could also go with something like an Android Wear watch as well, which is a great way to get to capture data. So, yeah, wearables.
Exactly. What were you going to say, Sam?
Don't forget about the new chip coming out from Particle, and that's the Electron. It supports cellular data at a very low cost, which means that you could build the doorbell device or other devices for use around your home with a waterproof enclosure and get everything set up and have a nice little ring.com device for your house.
Yeah, the cool thing there is it's broadband instead of Wi-Fi, so that's great. Put devices out in the field. So, one of the things about like the Pi. I love the Pi, and of course, being able to run Windows 10 on it and stuff is really cool. Being able to program C# is awesome, but the Pi doesn't have built-in analog input, right? And so you end up having to add in, an ADC chip or something like that to do it. And Sam, I know you've done a lot with this too, but we also have some really cool ways to tie that Pi in over Bluetooth or serial or Wi-Fi to another device like an Arduino or maybe even your phone. And then use your phone's sensors as input for the Pi, use an Arduino as input for the Pi. And so you almost start building these systems of devices to build some really cool solutions.
Well, I think a really inexpensive Arduino shield, which you could use with the Raspberry Pi, is just buy a cheap Windows phone and upgrade it to 10, and it acts as an Arduino shield.
Yep. Right, a virtual shield for Arduino, or the Arduino remote, vice versa, yeah.
Yeah. And it gives you the ability to have text to speech and speech to text, right? So it's pretty good.
So yeah, definitely don't underestimate some of the stuff that you've already got kicking around. I mean, you can do some stuff with your laptop, with your phone. A lot of my friends have Xboxes, so you've got the Kinect, so you can use that to be able to do some projects where you've got a vision device right there, so you can do stuff. I do a lot of 3D printing. The Kinect is a 3D scanner that works better than a lot of the 3D scanners that you can buy for more than the cost of the entire Xbox. So I've been able to use that 3D scan people or objects and then print them out based on the stuff that you've got there. It's great motion capture rig. You can do facial expression capture. There's a lot of software out that's already built for it, so you can kind of just plug it into your PC and run from there. So sometimes you'll have to buy little adapters or stuff to make it work on your PC, but you might already have stuff around the house that way you don't have to buy anything to get started on this. you're just you're ready to go and build a project right off of stuff that you already own.
Yeah, by this time, most of us have had smartphones for a number of years, so you probably have some old ones sitting in drawers that actually still have Bluetooth on them.
Yeah,
and most, you know, that you could still deploy code to.
And most if the screen is cracked, it still works. Cameras.
Yeah. And use those as cameras, right?
Sensors. Yep.
Most of those are approximately $300 worth of sensors.
Most of right, exactly.
They really are. If you press them out on SparkFun.
Just don't try desoldering them.
Yeah, no. But you can actually buy a brand new Windows phone for less than $50.
Yeah.
So it's great because these are great. Unlocked. And there's also some cheap Android phones as well you can use.
Yeah.
Oh, but actually, to that point, Sam, it doesn't matter if they're unlocked necessarily as long as they've got Wi-Fi. So you can connect it onto your Wi-Fi. You've got everything onto your network. It is nice if they still have cellular, if you can do it like a pay-as-you-go plan or something like that to get data on them for certain things. But yeah, most of them, you don't have to have a SIM in them. You don't have to have anything connected to it. Sometimes you can go out and buy a phone on you know, on a Black Friday kind of special for $20, and you can start start hacking on that.
Mm-hmm. Right. And of course, when you start buying hardware, especially around the Arduino, which I think everybody should kind of start at least with testing with Arduino at first. You at least have to try it to see how it works. You don't have to go necessarily for the genuine Arduino because since it's open source hardware, for example, you can go with something like the SparkFun Redboard, which sometimes is going to be cheaper. It's fully compatible. It's the exact same thing. So don't necessarily think that you have to buy the original Arduino for everything, especially since there's a lot of clones that sometimes will add more features like more radios or things like that. So anyway, of course, a lot of the things we've been talking about are going to be things that are going to be, it will be coming back in the Maker Show where we're going to go hands-on. I want to make sure people understand that episode zero is kind of like a discussion like this, but we're definitely going to go hands-on. We're going to go look at code. We're going to go build some gadgets. And we're also going to look at different techniques that can be used for building those gadgets. So as we bring the show to a close, can you just tell us a little bit more about what kind of topics would you like to see in the Maker Show, and what are some of the topics that you will be discussing in your own episodes?
Let me jump in real quick and just say that I think it's important that folks know that it's not doesn't always have to be a digital topic or a topic with a smart device that includes software or is cloud connected. I know that Brett has done some amazing things with just like material design and creating things out of aluminum or creating things out of wood, and that's very much on target for topics on the Maker Show, talking about sewing and talking about you know, techniques for just doing material things like that. For instance, Ian built those really cool lightsaber ears that he's wearing right now.
Just all in the light placement, you know?
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah, that's actually one of the first things I'm working on is I'm in the middle. I'm still near finishing it up, but making a foundry that I can use at home to melt aluminum so I can do castings off of things that I 3D print to end up with actual metal enclosures or metal, you know, custom metal parts for the projects that I make. So that's something I'll be sharing later.
Make sure to buy a fire extinguisher.
It's essential for any home maker.
That's probably not a bad idea for any maker, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, lithium batteries blow up.
3D printing as well, right?
Were you addressing me?
Yeah, Jeremy, you'll be talking about 3D printing as well.
Yeah, definitely. We've got a topic on the schedule for using Autodesk Fusion 360, a free program that's really powerful for creating 3D designs. And I'm going to show people how to marry up with existing parts. So let's say you've got yourself a little particle or something and you want to create an enclosure or something that that's going to adapt to it, that's something that needs to marry up with it. How do you bring that part in and then design around it perfectly? Without, you know, kind of having to be, you know, rough and do a lot of trials and stuff like that. So that's, I love that topic and I'm really excited to do that.
I'm excited to see that too because we just got the lulls bot and I'm like looking at it and saying, now what? So.
Kenny, what about you? What kind of stuff are you going to be talking about?
Yeah, so I'm going to be starting off with some of the things around Raspberry Pi, getting Windows 10 installed onto it and seeing, you know, basically walking through some of the existing tutorials that are online, see if you can connect it to some sensors and then have that talk to the cloud because that opens up an entirely new scenarios for you so that you can actually start actually taking a lot of readings and then saving them somewhere so you can do historic data. So we'll be starting with some of that kind of stuff. And then definitely, since I have access to the makerspace here, going to be doing some stuff with the laser, talk about how you can do things for enclosures, some little tips and tricks around building stuff so you can do like a completely screwless design just based off of stuff that you're cutting with a laser on that side. And then I love 3D, so I'm going to be doing some things like how to scan yourself or your friends in 3D using the Kinect, and then how to clean that up and be able to 3D print yourself.
I'm waiting
and
for
Sam,
that.
We have you
Kinect.
Up. Oh, go, sorry.
I said, I'm waiting for that. I've got my Kinect ready.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've actually scanned a lot of like people from Congress. We actually had a congressman from Brazil come in a while ago. Congressman from Japan. We've had the Prime Minister of Estonia. I'm actually on. You can see it online. I was on primetime TV in Estonia because the national press came by, and I scanned the Prime Minister. It's one of the things where it's like everybody is really into this this kind of 3D scanning and printing stuff. So I've got to meet a lot of really cool people because of it.
So that's another thing you're going to get on the Maker Show is a lot of random.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Estonian action figures. Hey, Sam, we actually have you up in a few weeks. What are you going to be talking about?
How to use servos in building some low-cost games. Physical games, not software games. And what we'll take a look at is if we just have tools around the house, a drill motor and a handsaw, how do we build things that we can use with hardware and software? So
right.
Should be good. And we'll be working with the pinball machine. I'm working on a pinball machine for
awesome.
This.
Nice. Ian, how about you?
I'm going to be sharing some stuff around how to do real-time communications between devices to enable different things like web robotics and flying drones, things like that. So,
very nice. Cool. And for my part, since we talked a lot about the particle, actually my first episode in probably a month or two is going to be around the particle, how to get started with the particle photon. Hopefully I'll get my Electron by then as well because I was a backer on Kickstarter. And I'll definitely be showing that as well. I know we're all waiting for it. But also, I want people to understand how there's going to be a lot of other contributors on the show. There's only six of us right now for this first episode zero. But we have a lot of our colleagues that will be joining us, like Brian Sherwin, Paul DiCarlo. We also have Stacey Mulcahy and Rachel Wild that will be joining, Nathaniel Rose, Jared Beans, and also there's David Crook will be one of the early episodes as well, talking about electronics, basically. We'll be covering sometimes, if somebody here is not an expert on electronics, I know I'm not, anyways, I'm still learning all that stuff, we'll be like getting some electronics 101 and basically how to get started. So this is a great show where if you're an expert, you're definitely going to learn something fun. At the very least, hopefully it's going to be enjoyable for you to watch. If you're not an expert and just getting started, then definitely this is the show for you. So we're going to be releasing new episodes every week, and sometimes we'll even throw in a few bonus episodes. Every episode is going to feature at least one of us going hands-on, showing code, showing techniques, building some new things, and giving you some extra value basically to extend on your maker skills. So guys, I want to thank you very much for joining this first episode of the Maker Show, and happy making.